Let me, by the way, tell you, my battery is almost running out of my phone, so I may have to transfer to my laptop now. Is that okay?
That's fine, no problem.
Okay, so let's do that now because it's like on 1%, so it's going to drop out any moment.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav. Steven cannot be with us this time. He had both of his wrists chopped open. And he's at home healing, and couldn't line up the schedule for him to be able to talk to this week's guest. Timon Krudenier. It's the best I'm going to be able to do with his name. He's Dutch. He's from the Netherlands, and I Americanized his name to Timon Krudenier. I'm sure that's not right. He's probably making fun of me right now. It's cool, man. I understand. Hey, you pronounce things funny too, okay? Give me a break. Timon was the lead guitar who replaced Jason Goble in the second go-around for the legendary metal band Cynic. Anyone who's never heard Cynic before, I don't know what to say to you. That's just a shame. You should go pick up Cynic. The album Focus is land-breaking. It's awesome. And they took a long hiatus. They came back. They needed a guitarist and a bass player. And they hooked up with this guy. So this guy was in Cynic for a while. That's a big deal to those of us that are into metal. So I first heard of him because he joined Cynic. And of course, anything Cynic does, I'm interested in. He did a side project, instrumental jazz fusion metal, whatever you want to call it, band called Exevious. Put out 2 releases with them. Love that stuff. I think it's phenomenal. And now we're also going to talk about his latest project, Our Oceans, which is almost Exevious, with him on vocals for the first time in his life ever. And there's a lot of DIY talk in here. This guy is doing everything on his own, label-free, kind of doing a lot of what I consider to be the right moves for DIY people. And I think anybody else out there doing their own thing should take some notes from this week's chapter, because Timon has done some smart things and really thought outside the box. And I'm excited to talk to him about it. Not just stoked to talk to him for the musical stuff, but also just his attitude towards the entrepreneurial approach that he has to making his own music. And there's some good advice in here. I do have to apologize for what you're about to hear, though. I can't fix it, man, but my voice has some sort of a digital glitch to it. I sent my files to people, a couple guys who are smarter than me, to try to eliminate it. It can't be done. So every time you hear me talk, you're going to hear this weird glitchy little fuzz, and I can't get it out. Sorry, man. It's the way it is. That's what happens when you depend on technology, you know? But it was a good, honest talk. He had a great time. Really felt like we had a great conversation. I'm very happy about it. And it's not worth not hearing. So you're just going to have to put up a little bit of digital robot Radiohead sound effect on my voice. It's not that bad. It's not unlistenable, but whatever, man. Once again, as always, I want to thank our Patreon helper outers, John, Jeremiah, and Ben. You guys are the best. I appreciate the support. And of course, there's always links if anybody else would like to throw a dollar in the digital tip jar, as everybody says. It's out there. I'm going to keep this commercial free. So that's how we're funding things. If you don't want to help out by cracking open the wallet, I get it. It's Christmas time. I'm broke too. But you can always go on iTunes and do a digital review. That'll help get the word out there for people to know about the podcast. Blah, blah, blah. You guys all know this shit. Anyway, on to the interview.
Like I said in the beginning, I always also used to be like a huge Cynic fan. Like it was my favorite band for like a couple of years in a row, you know. Mm-hmm. And that came simply from, you know, when I was about at the end of my 16th year. Do you say that? Like when I was almost 17, I picked up the guitar, and mm-hmm. very soon after that, I discovered Death, the band. And I totally fell in love with them. I was a huge fan of them. And that's also basically how I started, like how I learned to play the guitars. I just figured out all their songs by ear, probably made a lot of mistakes in the process, of course, because I had no idea what I was doing.
Let me stop you right there. Death,
yeah,
Death
right.
comes up constantly. And I have to ask, what's your favorite Death album?
Oh, well, that's hard. I think still from nostalgia. Reasons and everything just combined, I think it's Symbolic.
That's my favorite. I love Symbolic, Individual, and I actually love sound too, the last one. But
yeah, me too.
I always ask people what their favorite one is. So when you first heard of Death, what's the first album you heard? Was it Symbolic?
It was Symbolic, also. Yeah. Yeah, I remember him putting it. That was back in the good old days when we didn't really have internet, and you would go to the CD store to check out CDs, right? And I remember a friend tipped me like, "You should check that album out." And I very clearly remember that moment when I requested in the CD store, you know, to listen to that album, and I was at first like, especially with the voice, I never heard like a vocal style like that before. It's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah,
but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
And then I bought the CD and yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, that's great. I'm so happy. I've talked about Death all day, but let's not do that because we wind up talking about it all day. Okay. So Death was your introduction to guitar and you decided to start playing guitar based on that. Wow. You jumped in pretty deep. That's not an easy place.
Yeah, right. It's, yeah, that's true. It was thinking back, maybe kind of a weird place to start, but nice, you know, yeah. Anyways, let me continue that story. Then naturally, if you're a big fan of a band, you're going to check out what all the other members of the lineup do. So that's how I figured out Cynic, because as you definitely know, Paul and Sean played on the Human album, right?
Right.
And yeah, I remember I had a hard time finding their stuff because I was looking online. Back then, that was like in 97 or something, so still early internet days, at least here. And remember looking for it like forever online to find that kind of stuff. And eventually I found it, and song by song, not the entire album.
Wow.
And because it took ages to download each song illegally. Ooh, okay. Well, I bought it later legal, so I can say that now, right?
It's okay. Hey, that's fine.
Yeah, everyone does it, right?
Well,
and then, you know,
desperate. I mean, when you hear a band like Cynic, you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. Back then, like, I think also Cynic, like, their whole legacy and name, they grew a lot, like, from the time we discovered them and where, you know, when I joined the band, they were so much bigger than I ever thought they were, which was funny. So like back in the day, it was super hard to find their CD and everything, at least here. But yeah, so then I got into that band and I like really got into it. So became a huge fan. Mm-hmm. And that influenced like what I did with Exivius a lot, because I started that band pretty much as soon as I picked up a guitar. I just thought up that name in remember sitting in school, I was thinking like, I need a cool band name with an X in it. Such a stupid reason, right?
And the best reason. That's the best reason.
Yeah, that's what you do when you're young. And so I came up with that name, and everything I did ever since musically, I attached to that name. So then we recorded like a demo in 2001, and it was really heavily influenced by Death and by Cynic. And that demo just, you know, it never became really popular, but just in some kind of niche online, you know, community of people who are into that kind of music, we kind of got a little bit known. And that's eventually how Paul from Cynic found me also.
Interesting.
Because they were just looking for a new guitar player, and preferably also someone who could deal with the growl vocals. And yeah, then he found that demo. I think he got like someone should suggest that demo to him, actually, like check out like these guys and maybe maybe this guy can fit into your band somehow.
No kidding. So let me get this straight. Exivius made a demo, and based on that demo, someone introduced you to Paul, technically.
Yeah. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like...
I didn't expect that.
I thought
you beat out 50 guys trying out or something, you know?
Yeah, no, not at all. It was such a weird process in that way anyways, because, like, I remember when I got that email, like, from Paul, like, basically all out of the blue, like, explaining... we're in search of a guitar player. We think you're probably right fit. So what do you think? like, dude, what the fuck?
Right. So it's, what do I think? Hang on, I'm going to pass out. Clunk.
Yeah, exactly. I remember calling my girlfriend at the time and was like, holy shit, do you know what just happened? Like, I got asked for a cynic. Like, huh? How did that happen?
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Now, I assume that's how Robin got introduced to them also, because, hey, I know a bass player too, one of those things.
Yeah, exactly. We were working together, and Cynic was still looking for a bass player to do the live stuff, because Sean Malone played on that Trace the Nair album, but he couldn't do the live stuff back then.
Right.
And so then I suggested, why don't we take Robin with us? So.
Yeah, I was blown away by Rob. I was impressed with everybody because, I mean, you can't be a slouch if you join Cynic, right? But when I saw Cynic, I guess it was 2008 or 9 in Philadelphia. Was that
with Meshuggah?
I think so.
I think that was the first U.S. tour.
I think so. I don't remember because it was on my birthday,
okay.
And we crawled around Philadelphia and drank too much. So I was kind of like, I don't know. I was being led around by my friends really. But I do specifically remember walking in there with an attitude because I was like, look, I can see somebody replacing Jason Goble. Mm. Not that he's not good, but I mean, there's good guitarists out there everywhere. But there ain't no way in hell Cynic found a guy to play bass as good as Sean Malone. It's just not going to happen. So I kind of stood there with my arms crossed a little bit, and by the end of the show, I was like, I stand corrected. Damn. He impressed me. He is fantastic. And tell him I said.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will definitely tell him, and he will probably hear this as well later, I guess, and then he will hear it for himself. I can talk about that for a long time, but like he and I are, we have such a unique relationship anyways, I think, like in terms of the friendship plus the musical relationship, like just everything we do together just always gels so well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I only have praise for his playing and his personality and everything as well.
Very good. So Paul reached out to you, and you obviously accepted, and you brought Robin along because you said,
yeah,
I happen to know a bass player too. So now you have a slight problem called the Atlantic Ocean that you're not straight from Paul and Sean. At the time, were Paul and Sean in Florida or California?
Yeah, California already, LA.
Then, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So now what? Where's the bad news of, hey, I live in the Netherlands? Like, what did you do?
Especially back then, I'm not, now that I think about it, I'm not sure like how upfront I should be with the whole financial situation of that band. But yeah, I think I can just say that like back then there was a little more money available, and that was also because of when you sign a new record contract, you often get like a signing bonus.
Okay.
So, and Cynic got like a pretty big advance for their Trace the Nair record anyways. So there was just more money available. So that meant also easier travel, easier just buying airplane tickets and stuff like that. Nice. And also the value of the band as a live act was also higher than it is now. So like concerts like paid better, gigs. So it wasn't that big of a deal actually, financially anyways, that we lived so far apart, because we could just like easily buy tickets before tours and all that stuff, and that was that was all okay. And just like rehearsal wise it was we obviously couldn't rehearse for weeks together, so before every tour we played maybe three times together. Mm-hmm. And that was actually kind of exciting. You had to prepare really well at home yourself.
Right.
And and just approach it that way. But when you think about it, there was an equal amount of tours, I think, in Europe as there were in the US. So Whenever there was a Europe thing, then of course the cynic didn't have to buy tickets for Robin and me. So it's right. Like in that regard, it would save a lot of money, right?
Sure. Do you think the fact that, see, I just people just start making up their own stories. You just assume Cynic is the band. Cynic, their home base is California. I just assumed at one point these two guys named Timon and Robin probably moved to California.
And we did. And we did. Yeah. I was like halfway, I think, during the whole period when we played with them, we moved there.
Okay.
And that was a fun experiment, you know. I lived in San Diego for a bit, and then after that in LA also. And cool adventure, you know, to experience another country.
Did you like it?
There were things I did like and things I didn't like that much, you know, just as with probably would happen with most countries you would move to.
Sure. Like what? Like, go ahead, tell me.
Well, just on a personal level, it was sometimes a little hard to, without getting too philosophical and whatever and whatever. It seems like culturally our countries are very close to each other, like on first sight, right? But when you dive in a little bit more, you find out there are actually more differences than you think there are, and those differences at least that's how I felt, that it can sometimes make it a little hard to connect with people on the same level or something, because you feel like, you know, something is off or something. So that was maybe bugging me a little bit.
Okay.
So that would be the negative, but the positive was obviously the weather in California is really awesome.
Right on.
Love that. Living close to the sea, just always something to do, you know, that... It's such an alive place, LA, and but San Diego also, just the entire vibe there is awesome.
Okay.
So I do kind of miss that.
Yeah, sure. I've never been to San Diego. I heard it's pretty much, if you were to average the 12-month period, it's pretty much the most perfect weather on the planet. It's hot but not stupid hot, and when it gets cold,
exactly,
it's really still not that cold. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good description. That's it.
I find that interesting that you say that we are pretty close artistically and culturally, and then at a closer look, you find the differences, and that kind of bugged you a little bit. If you don't want to get into that any further, that's fine. But I would be curious as to, like, do you have an example? Only to make me more familiar with where you were coming from.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, Dutch people, and I also know that's kind of the stereotype thing and like how we are known to other people, is that we can come across really harsh and rude. But in our experience, like how we see it, we are just very honest and direct. Mm-hmm. And that can sometimes present some problems, especially if you work really closely with other people, for example, in a band. And we wouldn't be afraid, you know, to say whatever. If something is not going well, for example, in a rehearsal, or you're working on a song and you just think a certain part is not that good, you just, especially if you know the people well, you just say that part sucks. You know, do a better job. Something like that. It's not like, it saves a lot of time.
Yeah, that's really not going to fit in very good with how fake and artificial most Americans are.
Yeah, well, obviously there's always going to be some exceptions there, right?
Sure.
I noticed, by the way, now that you brought that up, I did notice like a difference between West Coast and especially California and rest of US people, I think, just to generalize, right? Because obviously it's all a lot of people, so it's hard to generalize, but yeah, I did find that I have an easier time to connect with East Coast people for some reason. It's fun sometimes to just talk like this and generalize. But in all honesty, of course, it's like it's much better to just how do you say that? Judge people from person to person, right?
I always say it's hard to paint with a broad brush because you cover too much.
That's a good one. Yeah.
People and music and art and everything, sometimes it's more circumstantial. Like, it wouldn't be fair for me to generalize everybody in Holland based on my conversation with you. But
exactly.
So far, you seem cool. So I think everybody in Holland is all right, you know?
I can tell you, you're wrong there.
Okay, so I did not know that they reached out to you, and I think that's pretty interesting. Where along the lines in Cynic did you part ways?
Time-wise, it was, I think, was it 2012 or 11? Man, I already forgot. We were working already on that album they put out not so long ago, the Kindly Bent album. And, you know, it's a long story to explain this all properly. So let me try and make it a little quicker than the whole thing.
Okay, man, I got time.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, me too. It just on a creative level, I was, speaking from my personal point of view, I was pretty happy in the band, and especially at that point, you know, I was already working with Paul for a number of years, Paul being like the main creative guy in the band, obviously. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, he gave me a lot of freedom to explore my own ideas. And so I was at a place where I was pretty comfortable in that regard, but I wasn't really super comfortable with the general direction that they wanted to take Cinecon. And it's funny because now, especially now that I put out the Our Oceans album, people are, I saw some people comment like, but they asked me like, but you weren't really happy with the softer style that Cynic was pursuing, but now you're doing Our Oceans. Like, what's up with that? But, you know, then they're kind of missing the point that the reason I don't particularly like that style for Cynic is because I think, and this gives me kind of a unique view on the band, is that I was a fan of the band, big fan. And as such, I could always kind of, it's much easier for me to see what the Cynic fans want. And that's not to say that a band should only do what the fans want. Of course, you know, there's also going to be, and that's, you know, that might be much more important to a lot of musicians, to just satisfy their own need of expression and, you know, basically do whatever they want to do.
Right.
But with Cynic's case, it was a little bit different to me because that band got, you know, they got over the years, they got this kind of legacy, super like unique band status, you know.
Right.
It's not like they were super hard for a lot of years to slowly grow that band, to slowly grow their fan base to that certain level. It was more of a, you know, they were really lucky actually that, you know, not to say that, you know, the music wasn't as good, because that album Focus is still one of my favorite albums and it's so unique. So
sure.
It's definitely deserved, but still, you know, the way that the band reached their status and everything was kind of a lot of luck, and just it grew organically without them doing anything. As such, I think you owe it a little more to your fans also to kind of to be respectful to what they want to hear from you.
Okay.
And I really noticed with Cynic, especially with Paul, that he wasn't that interested in playing that style. And I know from all the personal conversations as well that, you know, he wasn't really into that music anymore, into the metal thing. Mm-hmm. And he just really wanted to do more like an Aeon Spoke thing, you know, as the other band, they did more of a pop thing.
Right.
And so to me, it was like, especially on the latest album, it was just Aeon Spoke, like his quiet, more poppy product, but then still trying to sell it under the Cynic name, just for the sake of, because there was like an audience for it and not for the other band very much. And that just started to not sit very well with me anymore.
I see. And, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just the whole musical artistic side of it. And then on a personal level, yeah, that might be a little harder to get into without pissing off some people.
Actually, I do have one more Cynic point, and I'd like your perspective on it. I am confused about something, and I don't know if anybody really knows the answer. Sean Reinert put out a Facebook post saying, as of today, Cynic is no longer a live band.
Yeah.
To which Paul's response was, that's news to me. What the hell happened? Do you know?
Well, I'm not that much in touch with the guys, with Paul not at all anymore, but with Sean I am. And after that, I talked a bit more with Sean, so I kind of know what's up. It's hard to comment on this without because
no problem.
People are going to take it the wrong way.
Okay.
But I don't mind it. I don't mind it. So it's cool. You know, also because I spoke about this in the past also, for Sean's defense, because, you know, right now I see a lot of comments that are kind of Cynic fans being pissed at Sean because he supposedly broke up the band. Well, I can tell you that it's definitely not his fault. So,
okay.
You know, the shortest way of explaining this is that Paul can just be really hard to work with, like really some big control issues, you know.
Okay.
And that's okay. It's his band, but you know, over the years, I've seen him make enemies of a lot of people we worked with, sound engineers and merch people and managers, with lawsuits like in there. It's just for some reason he's really good at that. And Sean always stuck by his side. He was the only one that always, like, you know, defended him and stuck with him. And now, you know, it finally got to a stage where that also didn't work anymore. So I think it's, you know, it was kind of an inevitable thing to happen. Because their relationship has always been, from the start when I joined the band, they were always like fighting, but then still somehow Sean just still tolerated it. And at the end, well, now he doesn't anymore. And yeah, I can understand. And he seems to be doing really well since Cynic broke up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Also, like, his health is doing much better, and he's got some really cool plans music-wise lined up. So
awesome!
It's all cool, I think. You have to be so careful with that kind of stuff, because Paul is a really loved figure in the scene, especially from the diehard fans. So whenever I say something, I have to be careful with that. And it's not like I hate him. I should really say that. You know, I'm super grateful for my time in that band. And like I said, I was the biggest fan ever. And those couple of years in Cynic were some of the greatest years of my life. So I'm really grateful to him. It just, you know, what it all boils down to is that it just didn't really gel on a personal level, you know?
Gotcha.
And, no.
Did you feel that way in Traced in Air? Or did you feel, as Kindly Bent started to form, that's when it started then?
Yeah, that just happened over the years, you know, that you start to, also that you have to go through that transition of like being first introduced in that band. I was a fan of the band, and then slowly you become part of the band, and then you become like friends and business partners, or however you want to look at it, you know, just the relationship within the band. So that had to naturally grow over the years, and to, you know, to get to that point where I could make that decision, like, okay, it's time to move on and get back to what I want to do.
Of Exevious, because basically it was like, hey, those two new guys from the Netherlands and Cynic have another band, and it's an instrumental band, and I thought, oh man, I have to check that out. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk not only about Exevious for a little while, but I want to talk about the unique approach that you took to packaging, marketing, and making everybody feel like they were producers and involved with it. And what I'm speaking to is the first Exevious album, which is self-titled. You did like a specific, like some sort of like a lightning ball kind of artwork. Each, like you took a photo. It was almost like those, I don't know if you have them over there. I assume you do, but it looks like one of those plastic balls that you can touch with your fingers and the lightning bolts go up to the fingers.
Like
a wizard
ball. Those physics class things.
Yeah. So you took like this glowing ball in the center, and there was one lightning bolt, and that's number one. And then there was a second lightning bolt, and that's number two, all the way up through 1,000. And each of us got a numbered specific poster. And I, if I'm not mistaken, my CD is over there on my rack. I think I'm number 411. So that means my lightning ball thing has 411 little coming out of it, and nobody else. And I thought, that is cool as shit. I'm the only person that has this specific poster. And what led you to come up with these crazy packaging ideas? Like, why would you approach it the way you did?
Well, I have to give credit where credit is due there. It was, we just, you know, we as in the band wanted to do something a little bit special, I guess. And then the guy I've been working with for like forever for most of the art side of things when it comes to what I do musically. He's called Hendrik van Leeuwen, really Dutch name. And he's also coincidentally the boyfriend of my sister. So, you know, we go way back.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. And he's just really good at that kind of coming up with those kind of ideas. It's okay. Like, you know, you throw him something like we want to do something unique and something this, and he just comes back with those kind of ideas. So that was also his idea. And I'm glad, like, you know, the way you just told me how you perceive this as a, you know, as a customer, I guess. You know, that's exactly what we wanted to achieve. I guess there are also going to be some people who don't care. It's like, whatever, you know, right. 11 lines, I don't care. But I really do appreciate that. You know, that some people like you, that they can appreciate that, like that we spend some extra energy on that and also some extra money, of course, you know, to realize such a thing. So it's just nice to have the feeling that you're somehow reaching out a little more to the audience than, you know, the usual band does, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I think you're doing it right, because more and more. And this was, when did that album come out?
2009, I think.
Okay. That's 6 years old already. Like, that's kind of, that album, man, with all due respect, is old news. And your attitude of making sure that I felt like customer number 411, specifically, with a handwritten thank you note, that is huge now. And I think that you guys maybe didn't have the outreach to influence a lot of people with it, because Exevious wasn't as big as a huge metal band. But that, I honestly think in 2009 was kind of pioneering, because I don't think a lot of bands had social media figured out yet. I mean, hell, I joined Twitter in 2009, and I was like 40 millionth in line. Not exaggerating. I'm like 40 million something. So everybody was still kind of throwing out, listen to this. Check this out. Here's another. Here's something else. Here. And it just felt like everything has turned. Everything for those past 6 years has been turning into a commercial, and everyone's just throwing the same shit out and giving me the same options as everybody else. And here in 2009, this band from overseas sent me something and thanked me and handwrote me a note, like you handwrote the R. Oceans album. You were like, "Hey man, thank you, guy, and here's your name." And bands, people that are listening, do that. Like you just said, yeah, it cost me a little bit extra money. Yeah, but I'm talking to you about it 6 years later. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I know that it is awesome, and I appreciate that you guys went through the effort that you did, and we didn't even get into the second album yet. I think you all were crazy what you did on the second album. I've never heard of anybody doing that before. But fast forwarding to the Our Oceans album, you then built an email list and had my email since 2009, because in 2009 I ordered your first Exevious CD. 6 years later, you still have my email address and basically said, "Hey, dude, you've bought my stuff before. I'm making new stuff. Want to buy one?" And I went, "Yeah." And I sent you money. And I told my friend about it, who was into what you guys are doing. He bought an album. He bought two albums and gave one to somebody. He's going to be giving one to somebody as a Christmas gift. So because of the efforts, you spent extra money in 2000. You see where I'm going? Finally, I'm getting to my friggin' point.
Yeah.
In 2009, you spent a little bit of extra money and a little bit of extra time, and it helped you sell three albums 6 years from now. You did the right move and made the right investments in your customers, as you called me. And good on you. Right.
Yeah, I hate that word, by the way. But
I know, no problem. I don't take it as a customer thing, but yeah. Anybody who's listening, that's the whole point that I want to speak to the DIY people, because this man went out of his way to do stuff that was probably a pain in the ass, that cost you extra money, and that, frankly, you didn't have to do. You didn't owe me a poster. You didn't owe me anything specific, but you gave me one anyway, and now you kind of got me on the hook, and I don't mean that as a negative way. I just, you can email me and say, "Hey, I got a new album. You want to try it?" "Yes, I do. Here's my money," you know, and good job. That's all.
Well, thank you. That's good to hear. It's interesting anyways, like how, you know, when you're just a young guy playing guitar and you're just making some music, you're not thinking about all that kind of stuff that comes on later, like how the hell are you actually going to sell what you make, you know? And then slowly when you do kind of, you know, you start to study music, and then, okay, you think to yourself, okay, so I'm going to be a professional musician now. So that also kind of means that you have to sell what you do. And so then you have to start thinking in this commercial sense, while the music you made is the most uncommercial niche product ever. So it's an interesting thing, and I think that, you know, that's basically how that whole thing got started with especially Exevious doing kind of those more special things. And yeah, for the second album, we kind of skipped that, because that's, I guess, also a long story to explain what we did there with the whole artwork thing. About that in a bit. Let's see if I still remember all the details. But what it boils down to is that the concept for that album was liminality, that we based, kind of the way we approached the music on that album that way. It was kind of this state of, how you say that in English, like state of transformation. So the first state being something, or let's say you're going from one state to another one, and in between, the first state dissolves into some state of liminality.
Okay.
And it ends up whatever. Okay, so that artsy stuff aside, we kind of wanted to do something with the artwork, and that would also involve all the customers. No, I prefer to call them listeners, whatever. I also hate the word fans, by the way. I think that sounds like, you know, I put people beneath me or something. I hate that word. Anyway, we just wanted to do something to involve the listener even more, and to also involve them with the artwork. So then we came up with this thing where everyone would be able to participate in drawing the artwork. And we wanted to implement in a way that each customer would influence the next customers. Well, actually the other way around, right? So every new customer would continue on the work of the previous customer. And then just see where it ends up. You know, it's obviously abstract. It's not, you know, it wouldn't be like some image of something, but that wasn't really the point. So then we got in touch. Don't remember how actually, but it was a developer from this, like a really talented developer, software developer from company called Guerrilla Games. They make these like Killzone games and stuff, like big time.
Oh, cool.
Whatever. And he was just, you know, a cool guy that in his regular job, he gets paid like a lot. And we couldn't come close to paying that to him anyways, you know, that kind of salary. But he just saw he just liked the idea as well of our whole crazy artwork thing.
So he was like, okay, he shared in your vision.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, besides his math development, whatever coding skills, he also has kind of an artistic side to him. So I guess he could appreciate that. And so he for very, yeah, how do you say that? So, you know, we did pay him, but like for a very, can't find the English word. Damn it.
What are you looking for? For cheap?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
we'll say that he worked at a discount. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. So he helped us out tremendously with that. So that was really, really cool of him. Uh-huh. And he coded this 3D environment app that all the people who participated in the crowdfunding campaign that we did for that album, all those people could download that app, and they could, in that app, they could draw and design in a 3D environment. You know, their version of the artwork.
Right.
And not only did it get used for the final cover artwork as kind of a community artwork thing, but it would also be, you know, that particular snapshot of where, you know, what the customer made in the app would also be turned into a poster that we sent with the album.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So he,
that's a long story, right?
No, it's great. I need people to hear this kind of stuff. They, you know, you're not gonna figure out how to do that app or come up with that kind of software until you ask somebody. And that guy was like, sure, I'll help. And it helped turn the second album into something really special. So it reminded me of when, if you take a picture with your iPhone, I have an iPhone. If you take a picture with your iPhone and then you want to crop when you edit the picture, you can touch the corner and drag it down and it shrinks the entire, it'll crop the photo. Like if I just want to cut your face out or something like that. This computer program looked like black, lighter gray, and really, really, really light gray lines to give it a three-dimensional, like the black lines were thicker and harder and seemed like they were closer to you. And then the more gray the lines got, the deeper that the picture felt. And the end of every line had a spot you could click on and move all those lines. And
yeah.
I remember downloading it and being like, what the hell do they want me to do? Like, I don't understand what I'm doing. And I got into it, yeah. And I clicked on a couple, and I was like, oh, I'm helping draw. Oh, I see what I'm doing. So I remember I sat there for a while. I just like sat there one night. I think I made a coffee or poured a beer or something, and I just sat there, and I moved like everybody's lines. And I made like a, at one point I had what looked like a giant cucumber. and I thought, all right, that was too much. I remember just moving stuff around and having fun with it until I literally got to the point where I was like, okay, I've spent too much time on this, and I just walked away from it. And whatever I submitted, you guys sent me a poster specifically of what I made, and yeah. The album cover just wound up being the last submission that you had. Like, okay, we're done. Here's where everybody participated and drew this, right?
Yeah. I have to say, honestly, I did tweak the end result a little bit just to make it like a little friendly on the cover. But yeah, basically, yeah.
So you were the last, person to touch it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And I have that poster.
Right on.
Makes sense, cool. Right?
Yeah. You must
also, by the way, shout out for the person who made this Kuhn clusters. He made the whole thing open source also. So if you're like into programming and all that kind of stuff, you can get all this, all the code, source code for this stuff at his website. Neat. That I don't know from the top of my head, but if you search for it, you will find it.
I'm like intimidated and wouldn't touch that. I would get scared of it. But I was just about to say before you were talking about him, you must be in with a poster guy over there too, because you guys crank out a lot of posters, and it's pretty neat. I try to buy vinyl when I can, and I see a lot of bands are actually putting the time in to give posters again. They're folding it, putting it in there is just kind of like a bonus. Hey man, thanks for buying this, you know. And I feel like merchandise might be coming around again. I think we went through too much of the digital stuff, and everything became just digital, and there can't be any physical, because why do you need it? You can just download it, press a button, and it's magically in your phone. But I think you have stuck to your guns, you and your bandmates, you know, to be fair, they're in the band too. You guys have stuck to your guns and always provided something tangible that someone can hold, and not only tangible, but above and beyond. You did something kind of unique and specific with it.
Yeah, that's cool to hear.
Yeah.
And I agree with you there that, and I think a lot of people in the industry are thinking about the same thing. Like, you know, people still do want to, especially if they really like a band, they do still want to have something in their hands. They want to buy something, mm-hmm. but there just isn't a really perfect product for it right now, because who's going to play CDs? I don't even have a CD player in all my house, you know. It's like and right. That probably goes for more and more people. Like, even modern PCs and laptops don't have CD players anymore in them, and it's also such a small, like, little, especially to vinyl, right? It's such a small little cardboard thingy. And then of course there's vinyl, which I think that's one of the reasons why it's getting more popular these days, you know, not only because of people who just enjoy the whole vinyl experience on its own, just for sound quality, but also just to have something tangible, like big, in their hands. It just looks cool, right?
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. I'm interested to see where it'll go in the next couple of years, if, you know, other bands come up with cool new ideas that, you know, for something physical to, you know, that's interesting for the fans to buy.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to come up with the next idea, because we do want to beat that, of course, for the next Exivia CD. I have no idea what to do yet, but it has to be cool.
I'm happy to hear Exivia still exists. That's good news. Mm-hmm. Has Exivia ever played America?
No. Yeah, for our size band to get over there and then, you know, with all the costs of flights and work permits, it's pretty much impossible.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, I really hope something changes in the coming years, or, you know, we have to be We have to get more successful somehow, but because it would be really cool to finally come over there and play some shows. But yeah, it's too bad. It's just impossible right now.
Yeah, it's not going to get any cheaper. All right, so now let's move forward and talk about, let's update this and get to your latest release now. This band is called Our Oceans. And it says here, oh boy, you want me to bang up on these names. Tiemann, whatever the hell your last name was.
And, good enough.
And Mikkel on guitars.
Michelle?
Damn it.
Yeah.
And Robin on bass.
That's easy.
And Jasper on drums.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to do last names. I'll literally put a muscle in their face. Yeah.
I know. And it's especially also that it's not like all our last names are like that. It's just like
just you guys.
Yeah. With that lineup, it's just us guys. It's a crazy collection of last names.
Yeah. The next lineup that you form, you got to aim for more Jones and Smiths and, you know, simple last names.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's actually one of the reasons why I left out my last name on all the Cynic releases. I was like, no one can pronounce it anyways. Like, I'll just call myself Tiemann and be done with it.
That's interesting.
But yeah. Well.
See, now that's funny. Let's circle back around to the beginning of the conversation, how you said artistically that can be, you know, sometimes there's different viewpoints and everything. That can be taken as egotistical. But this guy is so full of himself, he thinks he's Sting or Cher or something.
Exactly. You know? Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And here, after talking to you and everything, I don't get a hint of ego at all. And here you were just saying, actually, I'm doing you all a favor because you all screw up my name anyway. So just call me by my first name. We're friends already. See, that's great. You know, that's why we're talking, man.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's good to hear. It's like that's such a crazy thing, anyways. Like maybe not completely on point of what we're talking about, but just, you know, you kind of make me think of it now. But that whole culture of misinterpretation and stuff like that.
Oh, we're big on that.
It's, well, just everyone, like, on this entire earth, right? It's so easy to, especially with modern media, when people just, you know, you don't see any verbal communication or whatever, you just see, or nonverbal, I should say.
Right.
Like, on Facebook status updates or something, and, okay, I'm kind of getting off point here, but...
I don't care. Go ahead, man. We're going off road.
Okay, well, yeah, right. Let's just go there.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it was interesting. Like some time ago, I posted, I can't remember exactly what, but I posted like just a silly Facebook update, status update, because I just like to do that sometimes. Just, you know, like we said earlier, it's good to not take yourself too seriously, right?
Right.
And I like sarcastic humor. Who doesn't? But then there are always going to be some people who misinterpret you, and especially if you have a lot of followers and a lot of you know, friends on your Facebook, that it trips me out sometimes. It's that, you know, people choose to misinterpret your you know, your intent.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. So it was interesting to hear how you just said that. I never actually thought about that people could also totally misinterpret that, like just taking only the first name, because, yeah, you're right. It can totally come off that way, like,
right,
you know, as some kind of an artist name, like, does he think he's Prince or something? But
oh, Prince, yeah, I didn't think of, I went with Cher. Hell, who's the Prince.
Yeah, it's like, that never entered my thoughts even, but it's, yeah.
Well, I hope nobody did, but I mean, hey, like you said,
probably
people want an excuse to be offended. They need an excuse to go on YouTube and make terrible comments. And I mean,
yeah, right. It's an interesting culture thing. Like as of lately, you see that so much on especially on YouTube comments. Like you said, it's crazy the amount of just negativity and hatred being thrown around there.
Yeah, it's funny too. What I find, how should I say that? I don't find it, I'm not surprised by it, because I think human nature is just to, you instantly just want to shit on it, you know? None of that surprises me. What surprises me is that every single person I've ever spoken to is in agreement that people shouldn't be like that. And we all...
Well, that is a good
right?
point. Yeah.
Yet, yet all of it exists. So how many people am I talking to that are completely full of shit, and they're just like, yeah, that's really terrible. And then they go home and they're like, that guy from Cynic thinks he's so full of himself. You know? That's what blows me away, is how many people probably change their story based on who they're speaking to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's pretty gross, but all right. No, that was fun. I like talking about that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm sure you've been asked 1,000 questions about Cynic before, but I want to talk about this in between stuff, you know?
Cool. But, yeah.
All right. So let's get to the R. Oceans album here. I just got this random email from my close and personal friend, Timon. No. As someone who, purchased a couple Exevious albums. Hey man, I'm starting a new band. Are you interested? Yep.
Yeah. So I'm glad you didn't see that as spam, right? Because no. I'm talking about the whole misinterpretation kind of thing and trying to sell your art and coming across as, maybe someone who's out for the commercial thing too much. That can be, even those kind of things can be totally misinterpreted, like taking an old email list from old customers, if you want to refer to yourself as that, and updating them with what you're doing now can totally be interpreted the wrong way. So I'm glad you're seeing it that way. It's, that's all it is. It's just trying to update people with what we do. And if they don't care, report spam in Gmail and be done, right?
Right, exactly. As I said before, I think because of the efforts that you made to make me feel specific of someone who purchased your stuff before, I feel like we're going to throw some big words around, like you don't like using the word customer, or I feel that you earned the right to approach me with that email. Hey man, there's something else that I have going on. As opposed
that's
to,
cool.
Oh, another commercial from this guy. You know what I mean? Because I've purchased, especially with vinyl, there's always a small company that gets a deal to repress something. I've never heard of this record company before, but they got the rights to press something on vinyl. Okay, cool. So I'll go online, and I have to submit my email address, and now... Here are the new releases. Here are the fall releases coming this Friday.
Yeah.
Bam, 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 bam. And I just feel like all I'm doing is digging through it to unsubscribe. So what your email list, you're doing it wrong. You did your email list wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking to that label, that is. I think you guys used your email list right. So it's the exact same thing, and you can definitely screw it up and make the wrong move. But I did not think it was spam at all, because I'm holding the album.
Good.
So,
So thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, man, no problem. When I got the first email, your intent And forgive me, I meant to look up her name at the time of the show, and I was getting my family's Christmas tree, so I just made it down here in time, frankly. But you were aiming to have a female vocalist that I think you met via Facebook, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think it was MySpace back then.
MySpace.
It was before before the Facebook thing. Yeah.
And then there was a little bit of a hiccup, and we got an email saying, it turns out it's not going to work out with her. We'll keep you updated. And then the next email came out with like, never mind, I'm going to sing. And then, so it cost you a little bit of time to get the album out. But first of all, good job singing on this album. You've never sang before, and honestly, you never sang this before. Like you said, you did the throat vocals with Cynic, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did a lot of the throaty, gurgly stuff, but this is kind of this is pretty dangerous territory, because this music is ethereal and atmospheric, and there's a lot of wiggle room in there. Whereas when you're doing metal and you just want to scream, I mean, hell, I can go in and shout into a microphone and you can kind of make me sound like a decent metal singer, honestly, you know?
That's how it works.
It takes a lot of balls to come out this far out into the atmosphere and let your voice be as fragile and fallible. And you navigated your way through it and found a decent singing voice in there. So,
thanks.
Yeah, no problem, man. And I'm not kissing your ass because, I mean, go listen. I'm going to post a song. Go listen to it. The dude can sing, you know? But two-part question. What happened with the first vocalist, if that's not too personal to get into? And secondly, did you decide to... Was it an immediate decision, forget it, I'll just sing, or did you go after other vocalists?
Right. Okay, so, you know, the whole Our Oceans thing did get started with actually me and her, and, you know, we got in touch, we became kind of internet friends, and I just wanted to work together with her somehow, and she was also interested in that. So she left it up to me to kind of decide on the whole approach, the music, basically everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool because I like to, you know, to set up a path and to, you know, kind of choose a direction to go in and all that stuff. So then I chose the whole like singer-songwriter-y thing because I love that kind of music. And I've never done anything with that. You know, over the years, I wrote some songs in that style, but I never put out anything like that. You know, Exivius is the opposite of that in a lot of ways.
Right.
So that plan was there. And then when it came to, you know, we the ideas were being thrown around of making an electronic album. Like, I mean in terms of instrumentation for the rest of the band, you know, so like with beats and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But then I took more of an approach of, you know, just with a band. I'm so used to working in that way. And it's, while I love electronic music, it's not something I'm really good at. So I figured, you know, why not go with something I know and I know we can do a decent job with, you know. So
right.
At that point, I started to think, okay, natural, you know, I want a bass player. So, okay, Robin, yeah, that immediately makes sense because with everything I do, it's like, you know, like I said before, on a personal and musical level, it clicked so well. So that was such an easy choice.
Hey, why not? The dude used to be in Cynic, right?
Yeah, exactly. and Michel, you know, he's my, I always call him kind of my composing, buddy, my composing partner in crime, whatever.
Okay.
You know, for Exivius, it's us that kind of, it's the two of us that write the songs and that have the, always the kind of the artistic vision of how that band should sound. So we're really kind of on the same frequency that way. So I figured, you know, why not ask him also to write some songs for Our Oceans and see what he comes up with.
Okay.
And same thing, like working with him, cool guitar player, so why not? So that's how he came in. And then I was with the drums, you know, I wanted something a little bit more just artistic and odd and, you know, someone who would understand that kind of mellow vibe.
Right.
And then Jasper, he's also, you know, we're all kind of in the same circle of friends here in Holland.
Okay.
One big family. So he just made a lot of sense. So at that point we got the whole band together, and in retrospect, it just turned out to be Exivius with another drummer. You know, it was never, it wasn't thought about that in that way. It was not how it grew, but, to really get back to answering your question, Nora, and I think Hakkinen, the last name, I honestly don't know. If I try, I'm probably going to butcher just as much as if you try to pronounce my last name. So I don't know how to pronounce it.
Gotcha.
Because she's from Finland, so I don't speak any Finnish.
Okay.
That girl, she never worked with any other musicians. She makes her own music alone, kind of a bedroom artist.
Okay.
And you can also really tell in the way she communicates and works that she's on all levels, that she's not used to working with other people.
I see.
So collaborating for her was something, and I found that out through experience, because I didn't know that, you know, when we started, we just talked and it all sounded like a good idea to collaborate, but she misinterpreted that whole thing. Like, she saw a collaboration as me doing my thing, and we, as the rest of the band, doing our thing, and then she doing her thing on top of that.
Okay.
It's kind of a linear thing, like music being made, vocals recorded, done.
Mm.
And you know, it's these stages. But everyone who is kind of into music, and I think a lot of people outside of music with some imagination, they can also, think that that's not the way it works with music and with the band and with... Actually, almost any kind of collaboration, if you have a group of people working towards like a common goal, like creating something together, it almost never is such a linear process, right? It's like one person does something here, then the other person gives feedback, and you create little loops, and that's how you get to the best possible product. It's not like everyone does their own thing, no one gives feedback, and that's just it. So... So during the recording process, we found out that, you know, that she couldn't handle that. Basically, whenever feedback came from us or criticism, it was just no. It was just leave, you know, take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what I do. This is it. Done. I'm the singer. Done. Just really cold like that. And and to me, it's like, I still love her voice. She's like a great artist at what she, you know, she's really good at what she does.
Right.
But, you know, some of the ideas were just not good enough. And that's tricky, of course, that's nothing personal. Like, that's, you know, everyone who you work with, no one is like a genius all the time. That's why you work together. That's why you collaborate, right?
Exactly.
And the same for me. Like, not everything I do is awesome. Of course not. A lot of it is pretty shitty. So that's why I have people around me to tell me when I do shitty things. And you learn from that. And, you know, that's the whole thing.
And it helps you grow. It doesn't it doesn't just help the finished product either. It helps you grow as a person. Like,
yeah, like, I agree.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be. It doesn't have to be a meme or a slap across the face, but at the same time, you have to learn to take a punch. Your friend that you love is going to have to tell you, dude, that sucked. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that takes some getting used to, of course, to being able to take that kind of criticism, especially when it comes to the thing that, you know, you're most passionate about, which for her is doing vocals. So, you know, if you're not used to that, to getting that kind of criticism, of course, that can come across really maybe hurtful or whatever. So in the end, I couldn't with, I think I also, that's how I explain it in the end, but through the email updates with that whole band crowdfunding thing, is that I just couldn't put out an album with the, you know, with those vocals the way they were recorded. Like there were some awesome parts, you know, don't get me wrong, but there were also some parts that were just not good enough. And that's something I think I'm easy to work with, except for that regard. Like if I do something, I want to do it right.
Right.
I don't want to, and especially with a crowdfunding campaign, when I know that people kind of trust you blindly, because there were basically no samples to go on. So right. People just bought that product, trusting us to give them something good. So with all those people having those kind of expectations and everything, I couldn't in good conscience give them an album like, yeah, here you go. I don't really like it that much myself, but here you go anyways.
Yeah. Holland, do you use the term half-assing something?
I know it, but
there you go. You don't want to half-ass.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I hate that. That's just the perfectionist thing in me, and it's also just on the long term. I think about that kind of, you know, maybe I think about a little too much, like what people think of me, not only as a musician, also in life in general. That's good, you know, kind of one of my characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And I care about that, and also like, you know, from a professional standpoint, if you as a musician you put out an album at some point that's kind of beneath, you know, the usual level of what you put out, then that's just it stains your reputation. It looks bad, and people are not going to forget that. And yeah, you just also you just want to put something out that you're proud of, right? Not
yeah.
something that, you know, that you're listening back to it and you're thinking like, nah. Almost, you know, it should be, it should be the best you can do.
Sure.
So yeah, that's how that came to be. And, you know, how we got to that point of, okay, we're going to have to move on and kick her out basically.
Okay. After your first choice for a vocalist didn't work out, was it an immediate decision for you to just say, forget it, I'll just sing? Or did you attempt to find other vocalists?
No, that was actually kind of interesting, because I think like a couple months before that all happened, I started seriously training to sing, like some serious vocal training, like a couple hours a day serious. And I did that because I wanted to see if I could get good enough to do vocals for Exivius, for the next Exivius album. Because, you know, I've always wanted to sing, and you know, at a certain point I found out, like, okay, everyone can sing, basically.
Right.
Because, believe me, I have the most unnatural singing voice in the world. Like, it took me so much effort to learn this. So, you know, as soon as I realized that, I was like, okay, I'm going to see if I can actually learn this, you know, to see if I can get it up to a level that it's actually usable.
Right.
And so when the Our Oceans break with Nora happened, I was already like, you know, progressing kind of okay, but still, you know, if I had the choice, I would never have recorded back then, because I didn't really think I was ready then. But okay. Still, like when the opportunity came up, it was like, you know, it because of the approach of the whole Our Oceans band in itself, with it being kind of a singer-songwriter kind of thing, it just made sense to me to do it myself, because like most of those songs are about like super personal experiences. And you know, the way I look at it, that whole singer-songwriter kind of genre is that, you know, the intent and the emotion and all that kind of stuff is actually more important than the musical performance, if you know what I mean. So I was like, you know, maybe I won't do a really good job on a technical level, but at least the songs will be meant. They will be honest and they will be true to, you know, kind of the reason why I wrote them in the first place.
Right.
So, you know, that was kind of it. And then I was like, okay, this is kind of one of those signs that it needed to happen. So I'll just take that, you know, take it that way and just take on the challenge.
So it was just immediate after Nora didn't work out. You just decided, I'll just try it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that whole process that I just described went through my brain in some minutes, and then I was like, okay, I'll do it.
Had to go take a walk with yourself and think, all right, do I really want to do this or not?
I was insecure about it as fuck. Like, really, it's scary as hell to, it's one thing to just play some guitar, but singing is in itself a much more direct kind of interface with the listener.
Sure.
So it's, you know, you're kind of talking in their ears. I don't know if I want to have such a close relationship with the listener. It's like scary.
A little bit too intimate.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And also, like, if, you know, it just happened to, how do you say that? It just happened this way, this whole thing. But if I would have a choice, I would never have debuted myself as a singer on a project like this, but rather on some kind of more, like a little bit more metal, that it's more just like, it's more, when singing is more like forced and like, well, forced is maybe not the right word, but if you have some powerful, more rock type vocals, it's just, you know, if you're going to sing about all this like personal stuff, it tends to get cheesy really fast.
Okay, right.
Because it's about love and that stuff. And it's like, ugh, it's, you know, some of the stuff, even if I read the lyrics back that I wrote, it's like I get goosebumps from, and not in a good way, but in a way like, do I really want to be that vulnerable for everyone? It's, you know, it's scary. Right.
Those are called douche chills. Do you have those? Do you have those in the
notes? I've never heard of them. That is the goodness.
Douche chills. Yeah, they're, it's I can imagine. I'm not much of a writer. I'm not much of a singer. I can hold a tune, but I'm definitely more of a background vocalist, if anything, at best.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought, anybody can step out front and shred. And I mean, you know, and any drummer can twirl a stick once in a while and people go, yay, you know. But to get out there and be vulnerable and pour your heart out and sing about a girl or sing about a relationship or sing about something intimate, religion or something like that. There's always the fear of that sucked. Boo, you know, and even if you don't just have to worry about accurately hitting the notes and having a decent voice, you kind of have to write pen to paper. You have to put something down that's easily accessible, yet at the same time, it isn't dumb and cheesy. And,
exactly.
It sounds like a lot to balance, and for you to try it here.
Yeah.
This is a real trial by fire. You know, this is really, you're really letting them hang out there, so to speak, you know, and I don't get the impression of it. I think it worked is my point. I can understand how you feel very, vulnerable. It's hard to admit that, you know, like 35-year-old man, I have to admit I'm vulnerable to people. You know? Yeah, I do. Because, you know, it's just like when people hang art in a gallery, there's always the fear that one person is going to walk in and go, whatever, I don't get it. And you just feel like, oh, I missed, instead of them missing me, I missed them. I missed my customer, so to speak. that takes balls, man. It really, like I said, it's to be in an environment of like hearing you scream, the Tea Garden throat vocals in Cynic was kind of like, well, okay, even if he doesn't sound exactly like him, I get the point. I see what he's doing. Sounds fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. I wrote it off. I'm there to hear him play the guitar, but to do something like this is way scarier and way more out on the limb.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's like the beef. It was kind of something that happened like, I don't know, 2 years ago or something. I can say that on here, right? Like I had one of those nights where I smoked a little weed. We all do in Holland, right? We're from Holland. And you get these stupid moments of realization, right? That you find these like heavenly conclusions that you never found before that are really dumb when you think about it the next day. And
okay.
But this one night I had this thing I was listening to also. I don't know what I was listening to. Don't remember, but it was something singer-songwriter, something small. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, like if you want to be that type of artist, you don't have, you can't be scared to be vulnerable. Like, and I wrote it down, like something like, a true artist is never scared to be vulnerable, something like that. And so when this whole project came about, I was like, that was somehow in the back of my mind. It was like, okay, I shouldn't be afraid of that. I'm just going to do it. And fuck it if people are going to, you know, going to think I'm a pussy or think, you know, going to interpret the wrong way, then too bad. I'm just going to try it.
Right.
And hope in the process to connect with some people and that they actually get it. That would be awesome. But, you know, so that's the setup for that.
I know. No. I know exactly what you just said. I just think, if I may, mm-hmm. I would tweak one little part of what you said. Instead of saying you never have to be scared of being vulnerable, on the contrary, I think it's great that you're scared to be vulnerable. You just have to do it anyway. Because yeah. I think that's where you're really going to get the good lyrics. You're really going to get a man that had to go in there and pour his emotions through a microphone, as opposed to, instead of saying, I'm not going to be scared about it, it's totally okay to admit that you're scared about it. It's,
I like how you put that. Yeah, that does make sense, actually. Maybe that part of you know, that kind of insecurity also kind of reflects how you exactly put into words what you want to tell, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I hear about some of the stories about while I was singing that song in the vocal booth, I started to cry, or all the memories of that situation or my childhood or something came out and it really hit me. And that's why my voice sounds like, and you kind of get that emotion coming out. And then I always think, okay, but that dude or that lady has to sing that live for the next 130 nights. Where that would be a struggle to make that emotional transparency to the crowd 8 months from now on tour. Like,
yeah,
how does it not become callous and become just a, yeah, here's a terrible song about an awful situation I was in, and it just falls out,
yeah,
and
right?
kind of loses it a little bit. So stay scared. Yeah. Stay scared, man. Stay vulnerable, because I hear it. And
that's cool. On a similar subject, I read like an interview with Björk. I don't know if you're into her stuff.
Homogenic is one of my favorite albums. I love it.
Oh, awesome. I also one of my favorite artists ever.
Okay.
And I read this interview that she recently put out this album. I don't know if you know, but I'll tell anyways because of for who's listening, I guess.
Okay.
What's the album, Volnia Cura or something? I don't know how to pronounce it. But anyways, the lyrical, like the entire concept of the album is very down to earth. It's like for her, she's usually a little bit more abstract, I guess. But that album is basically, yeah. And that album is just about a breakup and about her and her husband, I guess, or boyfriend, I don't know what it was, breaking up and having a family being torn apart. And I remember reading an interview where they also talked about that kind of subject that we just talked about. And she actually said, like, for the life stuff, that she wants to kind of forget how personal it was, because if she wouldn't, then she would never be able to sing about all that stuff live, like from night on, like day on day. So she, yeah, that was also interesting to me. Like, you know, that she can still keep, I guess, the message and the intent in place for the listener, but still for herself, she approached it more as a distant thing. Like in the studio, it was super like personal and in that moment. But then after that, she approaches it more as kind of a performance kind of thing. Like,
that's interesting too, because then the in the studio, the actual time of the performance that we all hear. Mm-hmm. would be the vulnerability and letting your guard down, so to speak. And then the tens of dozens of hundreds of into thousands of performances after that becomes therapy. And it helps her. It kind of helps pat the soil back down, you know, and it kind of helps.
Yeah, that's enough.
maybe she's going to maybe going out there and singing about it every night will help her get through something like that.
Yeah.
And that's cool that I get to be now as a listener, as a consumer, I get to be a part of that process now. Like I get to listen to the album and I get to hear, wow, that must suck. I feel really bad for you. And now I bought a ticket and I'll see you live and I'm helping you work through that now. Like I think on those different kind of levels too. I try really hard just not to think like, you know, I mean, anybody can find a reason to shit on a live performance. I mean, they hit a wrong note, or I'm standing all the way in the back. I got, you know, it's too far. I had to watch them on a video screen. I could have just watched it on YouTube. Yeah. We know that. But like you just said, Xevious never performed in America because I can't figure out how to make that happen. It's probably financially not doable. If you finally do drag all four of your asses over here to America and it makes more sense for you to play the West Coast, then I'm going to go on YouTube comments and make, and this is, what the hell? You forgot about Pennsylvania? It's just, you're never going to please everybody. Try to remember how intimate that this stuff is. And if the artists you're listening to aren't being intimate in the first place, you're doing it wrong. You're listening to the wrong stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I like your whole point of view on that stuff. Yeah, right on.
I think too much about it. And then I get frustrated and I walk away. Plans for Our Oceans, like you, the album is out.
Well,
sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Now what?
Well, thanks again. But not really sure, to be honest, because when we started this project, it was just meant to be kind of a studio project and, you know, get it done, get it out of our systems, move on. But as we, you know, we just put it out now and there, you know, the interest to what we're doing seems to be, it's still pretty small scale because we're a small band and not many people know us, but still we feel that the interest seems to be like more intense and more also from the kind of the, you know, professional world, if you can say that, you know, it seems to generate more response, like a better response than Xevious ever did. Mm. And that makes you think. It's like not in terms of, you know, selling out or something, that it's like, oh, there's more interest, so we'll just be doing this. Not that way, but it does make you think like, okay, you know, as a musician, I love doing both bands, Xevious, Our Oceans. It's both coming from the same place. You know, it's both coming from a place of just self-expression, doing what you love. So I don't think I enjoy doing one band over the other. Life, I don't know, because we haven't played with Our Oceans yet, but I can imagine that also being fun to do. So having said that, if it turns out there is like an interest for us to move forward and do some live stuff and maybe another album and whatever, then why not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to do so. So it's kind of, you know, we'll see where it goes now. If in the coming months, there's, you know, seems to be more of an interest, because we're already getting kind of a lot of emails asking if we're doing live shows and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I never expected that. I thought yeah, I honestly thought the interest for this project would be way lower than for Exivius. Right. But then that was probably my retarded thinking in that, you know, I love instrumental music, but 95% of all people don't. So it's, you know, not, if you have a band with vocals, that's so much more accessible for other people. So, yeah, I can understand that.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Okay, great. I'm glad to hear that you already finished your expectations of Our Ocean, because it was a studio project. It's out, CD in hand. Okay, I guess I'm done. And now to hear that there's additional interest in it, and now you might think about next level and actually playing live. That's great, because it means you're not finished yet. And that's all you ever want, is to be, it's for the art to be accepted. And okay, I guess I'll just keep rolling and see where I can take this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely cool.
Great. Last question. I'm always curious about this, and so I'm just going to ask you. You mentioned before, hey, I guess a cynic called me. I guess I'm going to be a professional musician. Do you do anything supplemental income, or are you literally just like, you're just the guitar guy, or do you have a job?
No, well, if you consider teaching, like teaching guitar, a day job, then I do that.
Got it.
But not a lot, like one day a week right now.
Okay.
So it's not a lot at all. But yeah,
is that via the internet, or is that people come to your house?
Yeah, both. Just advertise locally and people show up that have no idea who I am, and that's nice. And it's mostly beginners, and you know, I've been doing that for years, so it's yeah, and to be honest, it's not the thing I like most in the world, you know. It's
sure.
If I didn't have to do it, I wouldn't do it, but it's not terrible either. I'm not complaining. It's you know, it's still a fun job. And then also there are some like Skype lesson stuff, and that's a little more interesting to do because it's usually people who know me from what I'm doing with my bands.
Sure.
So it's a little more specific, and usually it's also people who can play pretty well. So it's, you know, that's fun to do. And other than that, it's some studio work and the band stuff, and that's it.
Wow. Good for you. That's really cool that you're doing that. That cannot be easy. That's a lot of plates to keep spinning in there.
Yeah, it's it's not easy financially, but yeah, what else am I gonna do? It's like, you know, I can take on some stupid side job and you know, the thing is that if you do that, then I need to, or rather, all the time you invest in that job is just time I've thrown away that I could have also used to improve myself as a musician, or absolutely, to spend on a new album for whatever. And it's just, I find that so much more important that I rather live as almost like a homeless poor dude than it's just a choice you make, you know.
Honestly, it's an inspiration, because it is a conscious choice you're making, and if it makes you feel any better, I have a pretty decent job and I get paid pretty well, and I don't have any money either, so I mean, the hell makes a difference. So good for you, man. That's great to hear. Send me that information too, because you never know. Somebody listening to this podcast might, I never knew that, and maybe hook you up with a guitar lesson for somebody or something.
But, oh yeah, definitely. That's just going through Skype, so it's easy enough. You hit me up through Facebook. Easy to find.
He's easy to find. Just don't try to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, just stay away from that. Or you can maybe turn it into like, that's the easiest way to explain it to American people. If you take Kruidenier and you just split it up in crew, denier. So then you're the denier of crews. No idea what that is. But, you know, it's still better than the Dutch thing. So
Kruidenier. Timon Kruidenier. Did I say it?
It's almost correct. So
it's the best. Very good. I ran it through the American filter. It's probably the best I'm going to get it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Timon, thank you so much for your time. I really it was really an honor to talk to you. This was a special one for me, because not just the Cynic and the Exevious and the R Oceans and the fact that I like every bit of this music and everything. It's the DIY, do it yourself, and making the person consuming and the customer buying what you're doing really honestly feel that that you made one for me. And that is so huge right now. If anybody takes anything from this podcast, make sure that you're going through the extra effort to do that, because it matters. Because 6 years later, I still want to buy the guy's stuff and talk to the dude. So,
cool, man. Well, thank you. Thank you very much as well. It's, I don't think I've ever done like an interview kind of thing that was this, this interesting, you know, talking about all this kind of, definitely.
That's funny, because I just recently spoke to someone that said, everybody's just talking to everybody else, and what's going to make your podcast more special and make it stick out?
Well, then this is it. It's more personal, and it touches upon subjects that are a little bit outside of what, you know, what most people ask. So, and that's much more fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, props to you. Definitely cool.
Thanks, man. Yeah, thanks a lot. That actually, I needed to hear that. That's an encouragement. I hope my listeners are smiling as big as I am. So,
awesome. Yeah, thanks again, man.
Those are called douche chills.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.